This episode is brought to you by Ursa Minor Outfitters. Folks, I'm absolutely in love with my Loon mug. It's handmade. It's an absolute piece of art. Whether it's at the office or at the house, people keep asking to check it out. If you're not a Loon fan, they also have other beautiful mugs for wildlife fans of moose, bears, and eagles. They specialize in products highlighting the outdoors and local pride through quality design by local artists. They've even started expanding into items beyond mugs, like apparel, dog accessories, and soon candles and more. They also try to partner and highlight other small businesses, and in some cases, forgo profits in lieu of charitable giving to help their community, such as the dog rescue. So check them out, ursaminoroutfitters.com, and enter promo code HIKESMIKES10 at checkout to receive 10% off your order. And for our four-legged hiking partners, they also have a portable silicone dog bowl and also a sweet over-the-collar dog bandana. Go check them out, ursaminoroutfitters.com, and don't forget to enter promo code HIKESMIKES10 at checkout to receive 10% off your order. Welcome everyone to the Hikes and Mikes podcast. I'm your host, Ivan, and together we'll embark on a weekly journey connecting with extraordinary hikers from all corners of the U.S. and beyond. As the cool and colorful embrace of fall envelops the Northern Hemisphere, we've had the privilege of conversing with remarkable individuals throughout this season. Their experiences and adventures will leave you yearning to hit the trails. Closing out season four, we're bringing it back to my home state of Washington to talk to an amazing hiker. Her name is Erin, and you can follow her on Instagram at erin.hikes.pnw. Erin shares with us some of the amazing places she's been able to visit and explore here in Washington State, including nearly half of the local fire tower lookouts. She also shares about her incredible experiences reaching the Three Fingers Fire Lookout and summiting Mount St. Helens. Without further ado, let's jump into this episode with our guest, Erin. Welcome everyone to the latest episode of the Hikes and Mikes podcast. I'm really excited to talk to this next upcoming guest that we have here today. She's from my neck of the woods, the Pacific Northwest. Erin, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. I'm really excited to chat with you. You know, we always like to start off the podcast by asking our guests how long they've been hiking for and how they got started.
Hi, well, I'm so glad to be here. I've been hiking most of my life. My proof is that my grandma has this book that she took record of her hikes and the dates that she did them. And next to Heather Lake in 1989, if you look in there, my name is right next to it. That would have made me 2 years old.
Started early.
Yeah.
And how would you describe the hiking scene in and around your neck of the woods?
I have been very fortunate to have people most of my life who hike with me. Currently, I have a really great group of women who we all go together. So the scene necessarily, I would say people are respectful. Unless you're in a really populated area, then you have the Bluetooth speakers and a lot of trash. And other than that, once you get way out there, it's very respectful people.
With the Pacific Northwest, and especially in Washington, there's such a wide variety of hiking regions and landscapes. And what would you say are some of your favorite regions to explore here in Washington State?
My heart belongs to the North Cascades. I have been all over as far east as Quartz Mountain, which is in the Spokane area. And then we just did the Blue Mountains, which is the far southeast region. And those areas are really beautiful in their own way. But when it comes to the North Cascades, they always win.
It's definitely become, I think, my favorite national park to visit here in the state of Washington. Now, I got to ask you, because the Blue Mountains have been on my bucket list for a while. How was it visiting and exploring the Blue Mountains?
Well, we just were there right before Halloween. So we were kind of in this spooky mood, and it did feel very spooky. We went to this area called, I think it was Dead Man's Ridge. And then we stayed at the Godman Guard Station, and it was also spooky. But the sunsets, all the nights we were there, were just outrageously colorful. Just the neon pink and neon orange and beautiful lit up landscape. And then the mountains do turn blue when the sun sets. Totally worth it.
Yeah, and for folks that don't know, the Blue Mountains are just east and southeast of Walla Walla, Washington, and they are a hidden gem for Washington. Now, Aaron, I wanted to ask you, you know, we're at the tail end of fall, but how was your summer hiking season? Any memorable hikes or destinations that you got a chance to visit?
Well, we did so much this summer, starting with Gobbler's Knob, which is near Mount Rainier. I did Fremont, which is also near Mount Rainier. Meadow Butte was an interesting one, and that's in, I want to say, southern Washington, south of Mount Adams. It's a very, very old fire lookout, but it's the kind that's just nailed into the tree. I think the history on that one is that they used it for railroad purposes. And then we did Sourdough and Copper Ridge and Three Fingers, back to back to back hiking all summer long.
You know, we'll definitely be touching base on some of those fire lookouts that you were able to do and kind of do a deep dive on them. You know, with us being in the tail end of fall, have you got a chance to do any fall hikes and maybe see the larches or fall colors?
I didn't see any larches this year. I did go to Tarnagain Ridge, which is right outside of Artist Point, and the red foliage all along the ground was just beautiful. And then Winchester, we did it at the first weekend in September. We did Winchester, and the colors were just starting to change. It was gorgeous.
Yeah, this was a good year for fall colors, because we were talking before we started recording that in 2022 we really didn't get a fall. We just kind of went from summer to winter with snow up in the mountains. What's your winter hiking plans?
Well, with how packed my summer was, I was told by family to kind of chill out a little bit. I would like to try to go to Puyallup Ridge again. That one, I think, is a 22-mile snowshoe, if I'm remembering correctly. When we did it last year, it was blowing ice sideways at us when we got to the lookout. So we didn't get to see any view. And I've briefly asked my partner if she would want to go. And she's teetering on the edge of saying yes. So that right now, that's the only thing that's in my view at the moment.
Now, when it comes to snowshoeing, I feel like a lot more people tend to use trekking poles during snowshoes, but then I still see folks that don't. How do you feel about using trek poles when you're out snowshoeing?
I generally only use trekking poles when I'm snowshoeing. I can't imagine not using them, actually. I see, maybe it just has to do with balance. I don't trust them enough, I guess.
Now, Aaron, you know, you've been able to do a lot of the unique fire tower lookouts here in Washington State. And I've talked to a lot of folks from the East Coast that have fire tower lookout lists that people are trying to cross off. And you really showed me that there's quite a bit of variety in what our fire tower lookouts look like. Because I always had this idea that they weren't too far off the ground. They were on, you know, stilts, and it was more like a little cabin. But you've really showed a wide range of the lookouts here in Washington State. You know, you've done the ones that are extremely popular in and around Mount Rainier because of the gorgeous view of the mountain. But you've also been able to cross off the not so popular ones and the harder to get to ones. How did your love for fire tower lookouts start? And do you remember which one was your first one?
I do remember my first one. It was Mount Pilchuck. I think it was in 2006. You know, I was maybe 19 or 20. So I remember we had been up all night hanging out with friends. And in the morning, they said, well, let's go do a hike. And they chose Pilchuck. And we started kind of late in the day. And I remember watching the sun go down as we were coming down and thinking, I really don't want to be out here when the sun goes down. But then here we are, fast forward to today, and I love being out there when the sun goes down. As far as when my love for fire lookouts started, I set the goal in 2021 to get to all the fire lookouts. And the reason being, my mom was diagnosed with stage 4 metastasized HER2 positive breast cancer with 2.5 to 5 years to live. And watching her go through treatment was this huge wake up call for me. Like, we don't get a promise for tomorrow. And now is the time to do something with the time that we have. And I wanted a legacy, and I knew I wanted to do something big, but I also at the time didn't really want to just summit all the large mountains. That's a big deal to do, but I kind of wanted something that would last a little bit longer and something that would be a bit of a treasure hunt and a challenge and something that would take me to far off places. And so I talked to a couple friends who had been to more of the fire lookouts, and I met my hiking buddy Katie through Instagram, and we hit it off like immediately, best friends. And so that's what that's when it started. 2021, I guess, would probably be when I would map that out. Yeah.
And how many total fire tower lookouts are there in Washington State?
When I started, there was 93. One of them burned down, and I don't remember which one right now. And then I have a map of Washington State that has all the lookouts pinned on it, but it has an extra one on there that's not included on the peak baggers list. So I'm going to say 93, but that could give or take one. And then there's ones like High Rock that there's no lookout there right now. It's just a platform. And then there's some that I don't know if I'd really consider it a fire lookout, because there's some that weren't really used for the purpose of fire looking.
Interesting. I didn't realize we had that many. And I think there's some, especially near like White Pass, where it's just the, I don't know what you would call them, but the footings of what's left of the fire tower lookout. So I can imagine, you know, during the heyday, we probably had well over 100 active fire lookouts in our state. And Aaron, I think you've done them all that are around Mount Rainier National Park, right?
I have not done Schreiner, High Rock, or Watch Mountain. And I haven't done Kelly Butte either, but those are near Mount Rainier.
Out of the popular ones like Fremont and Tolmie, do you have a favorite one to view the mountain from?
I think Fremont was the coolest one because you're really right up close to it. However, that is the busiest one. So if you want a close-up view of Mount Rainier, then you're going to want to go to Gobbler's Knob. But it's a bit of a trek to get there.
Now, Aaron, one of my favorite parts of the podcast or segments of the podcast is we like to do a deep dive into our guests' Instagram and pick out a picture or a reel that catches our attention. And I knew instantly from when I saw this that I had to ask you about the Three Fingers Lookout, which to me, and this is just my personal opinion, but it is the coolest fire tower lookout in all the United States. Just the way you have to get there and then the views that you have from the top, especially on a sunny day, is just remarkable. Can you share with us a little bit about that experience?
Yeah. So I can see Three Fingers like from my house. So I've wanted to go there my whole life. I didn't realize that there was a fire lookout on it until maybe 10 years ago. Let's see. When I talked to Katie through Instagram, started making plans together, I suggested an attempt this summer, which is kind of crazy to think about now that it was like, hey, like, let's just try. When looking back on it now, I'm like, dang, we really did that. That was so cool. Like, we didn't realize our strength. So we were calling it an attempt the whole time. You know, we were so planning got a bit tricky. Because if you go to All Trails and you read reviews, there's no review on the trails. It's just people claiming what date they're planning on going. Luckily, I had a friend who's been there, and he was kind of my mental guru. You know, I'd call him and I'd be like, man, I don't think I can do it. I'm just so scared. And he's like, no, you're going to be fine. Just go. And he and I have hiked together mm-hmm. several times. So he knows my limits. He said, just take your time. You know what you're doing. You're good at this. This is your thing, Aaron. You got this. And then what are they called? The Friends of Three Fingers. It's a volunteer group who they care for the lookout. I got in touch with one of the volunteers and he was able to give me our water source stops and, you know, the best way to get there. And he also was a little mental encouragement. You'll be fine, you know. So we decided to bike the first 9-ish miles to the trailhead. And then it's about a 7-mile hike to the Goat Flats, where we set up camp and spent the night there. I was freezing cold the first night. I got out of my tent and the ground was frozen. And I wasn't expecting that in August. So I didn't sleep at all the first night, get up and go summits. And it was the most dangerous and exciting and beautiful 8 miles I've ever hiked. You kind of get up and you go around one of the peaks and you look over to the west and you can see like Everett and Boeing all lit up. And then you hike along and wow. Yeah. And as the sun was coming, there was, I think the sourdough fire was still burning and there was just this haze sitting down in all the mountain peaks. And as the sun's coming up, it's casting all these really long shadows across the peaks. It's so beautiful. And then we come up to this area where I thought we were going down over this ridge, and she stops and she looks at me and she goes, "Look at this," like just totally defeated. And I look down and there's just this rope tied to a stump, and it's probably 30 feet long. And I'm like, am I going first? And she goes, "I don't care. I don't know." So it's like, I'm going first. Yeah. So I get down and I'm going down it. And as soon as the rope runs out, there's still loose gravel and hill to go down. And that was a little intimidating because if you slip, it was kind of like, if you slip, you're going to pick up speed as you're going and probably go right off the edge of the, yeah, I did slip, just for the record. And those pants are now no longer with us. then it's just this awesome winding trail that you're just on the peak or on the ridge the whole time. And you come up to this snow field that's very steep that we were told was going to be soft, but because we left so early in the morning and the ground was frozen, the snowfield was frozen and we didn't bring any spikes or trekking poles. That was intimidating. That one, if you slipped, I mean, we both know how to self-arrest, but if you slip, it was a very long way to slide. And then there's all this scrambling you have to do on more loose gravel. And then you come around to the west facing side and there's the ladders, but there's two ladders and I would say they're probably each 20 feet. So you get to the top of the second ladder and it's these two boulders. And then there's a rope that you kind of hold on to and climb the next 10-foot section. Except I got stuck, my backpack got stuck between those two rocks. And you know, you can't push backwards because if go backwards, you're falling 40 feet. If you go forward, it's a very delicate forward that you have to do because the ladder, there's a big gap between you and the boulder in front of you. So there are puncture holes all along the side of my backpack that I kind of like, I don't really want to cover them because it's kind of like these badges of honor. But then I got so shook up from being stuck that I stopped on this ledge right in front of the final ladder. And I remember sitting there and being like, I came this far. I can't give up now. But I was shaking at that point because you're so tired. I haven't slept. I just got stuck between two rocks and so frustrated. And I just have to climb this one last ladder. And you know, finally got the courage, crossed that last boulder and climbed up there. And you turn around and look at what you've accomplished and you feel like you're on top of the world. I think it only sits at like 6,800 feet, but because of the way that it's positioned up on this platform, it's just, I don't think anything else will ever compare to the feeling. Yeah. And then coming down, actually, let me backtrack. There was nine men in the fire lookout that night. And I watched every single one of them go down the ladder with hesitation. And, you know, they stand on the edge right next to it. And they were like, okay, all right, let's do this. Like, they were just as nervous as I was. And it made me feel, I was like, okay, grown men are scared. It's okay that I got scared. But yeah, I stood on the edge of that cliff too, and was like, okay, I gotta go down this ladder. Like, cause it's just a straight drop. If you fall, you're done.
Oh no, props to you, Aaron. Cause it's definitely one that's on my list, but it's probably the most intimidating hike that I would do in Washington. You know, from pictures, Aaron, those ladders look like maybe 6 or 8 footers. So to hear that they're like 20 footers that you have to climb, it's just, you know, it adds to the ridiculousness of this hike. You know, kind of backtracking, I did want to ask you, like, that's one thing that's challenging about this hike is the road to the trailhead is closed off now. So either you have to hike those 8 to 9 miles to the trailhead or you have to bike.
Yeah.
By biking, is there a place that you could secure your bikes or do you just kind of leave them next to the trailhead?
There's this little area. It's woods that you can chain your bike up to a tree. Now, it made me nervous at first, thinking I have to leave my very prized possession in the woods, but nobody's going to hike out 8 or 9 miles just to steal your bike. And anyone who's already out there, it's like you don't mess with anybody else's stuff out there. It's just, you have to be respectful. And everyone who we passed and everyone who has gone, there's this understand. It's a team. You're all a team. So whether you've met or not.
You know, you mentioned going up and down the ladders. Doing them both, looking back at it now, was the most challenging. Was it going up? Because I feel like sometimes it's coming down that's a little bit more dangerous.
I did not like coming down at all. Going up, you have the adrenaline of knowing you're about to just finish this amazing goal you've had for years. And I could talk myself into it. But coming down, I was bummed out because I wanted to stay at the lookout for as long as possible. And also, you have to look down. You don't have the option of the I can look up part. And knowing that I got stuck on my way up, I was scared to go back through that. And then coming down the rope section too, I don't know if anybody else has been there, but I remember it being about 8 to 10 feet of just rope. And I'm 5'6". So there's some like kind of sketchy movements that, and I'm not a climber. I learned that on Three Fingers that I probably won't ever be a climber. So yeah.
I'm curious because, you know, it's something I haven't like fully planned out, but there is that debate, like, because I know some people will hike the 8 to 9 miles to the trailhead and break it up into like a 3 or 4 day trip. Do you have any other tips or advice for people that might be interested in doing Three Fingers that you can share?
I would say if it's a question of if you want to bike or hike it, I would definitely recommend bringing the bike. We ended up pushing our bikes a lot on the way up. But coming down with a bike and you're being so exhausted. And when you see that bike, you know, when you see your car at the end of a hike and you're so excited, you're like, oh, my car, I can sit down. It was the same feeling, but probably even greater because the distance we had traveled and the things that we had gone through, no sleep being one of those, seeing my bike was just amazing. And then like the freedom of just flying down, going so fast, that was great too. Just the thrill was never ending. And then on that trip, I wish I would have brought more food. I usually bring too much. But that one, your whole body, it's more like a marathon than it is just a hike because you're biking. And then the hike itself, the trail between the trailhead and the Goat Flats, it's washed out. It's eroded. There's a lot of downed trees. So your whole body is working, not just a regular hike. So I found myself to be very needing of calories. So I had brought some freeze-dried candy and I ate that and it gave me enough energy to get through the rest of our setting up of camp. But that's what I would recommend. If you're someone who doesn't bring a lot of food, just plan on bringing extra food.
Oh, good to know. And, you know, one thing I wanted to ask you, and you mentioned the group that's preserving and conserving the Fire Tower Lookout. But one thing that I've read in my research is that they'll kind of set up little stations along the trail, plies that they'll need for repairs and whatnot. Were you able to come across some of those? Because I think I've read that some people came across like buckets of paint or paintbrushes or, you know, hardware to fix a certain thing.
We didn't come across any supplies. We did, when we got back to the trailhead where the road meets the trail, there was a couple of people who were coming up on bikes and he was pulling a wagon that was full of tools.
Oh, wow.
And I was very impressed because he was still riding at the time too. And I by that time when we were riding up, we were both pushing our bikes without a wagon behind us with tools and stuff. And then they got all the tools out and they headed up the trail. So I think they took it all the way up. But My friend, though, she had gotten in touch with the Friends of Three Fingers as well, and she had volunteered us to take some supplies, but another group said they were going before us, so they ended up taking it instead.
And, you know, one thing that I'm always curious about, because not all of them you're able to enter or even stay overnight, but have you been able to do some overnight stays at certain fire tower lookouts?
Yes. The first one I stayed at was Taiyi, then I stayed at Stellico. I volunteered at Suntop. We stayed at Lorena Butte and Quartz Mountain. I think there's, don't quote me on this, but I think there's a total of 7 that you can rent. And then there's the first come, first served ones like Pilchuck and Three Fingers. And I want to say Park Butte. Winchester is one.
How is it staying overnight in one of those?
It's great, especially for stargazing. You're pulled away from the outside elements. You feel a little bit more safe than when you're in a tent. But then there's also the element of, like, there's windows all around you, so you feel kind of exposed.
Oh, yeah.
Especially if you're at a drive-up one, then you never know who's coming up the road in the middle of the night.
True.
But a lot of them, the ones that you can rent, they have gas stoves, they have heaters, they have nice, comfy pets.
Interesting. Now, you mentioned that there's about 90 plus here in Washington State. How many have you been able to cross off that list?
I am at 39.
Nice. Almost halfway there. Right on, Aaron. I know. Now, out of all of them, I know that, you know, each one is unique in its own way, but are there any unique ones that stand out just, you know, on how they look, the access to them? Are there any that are kind of unique or funky in a way?
Kitsap Lookout is just this old steel tower. And the story is that it was used in World War II. And it's on a tree farm. And you have to bushwhack to get to it. There's no trail. So that one was interesting. Then Pyramid Mountain, that one's on the peninsula. And it overlooks, what's the lake over there? Crescent Lake?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's on, do you know where Storm King is? It's just on the opposite side.
Oh, no.
So when you're on Pyramid and you look across, there's Storm King right over there. And it's like a little shack. I guess you could spend the night in that one too, if you were really up for the spooky experience. But that one was interesting because it's so different. It's not built like any of the other fire lookouts and it's placed differently. And they said, in my research, I should say that it was also used for one of the wars so that they can watch aircraft coming in. What else? Oh, Meadow Butte. I think I touched on that one earlier where it's one of the ones that are just nailed to a tree and was used in the production of railroads somehow.
Yeah, you know, I didn't know about the lookouts for the wars, but I know that like in places along the coast, there's like bunkers that were made during World War II specifically for the war. So that kind of makes sense that there's probably some lookouts that were further up the mountain. Now, moving away from fire tower lookouts, you've also done some amazing hiking and mountaineering, one of which is being able to summit Mount St. Helens. How was that experience and how did that kind of come about?
So again, I mentioned earlier that I didn't really have any desire to summit any of the big mountains. However, the group of girls that I hike with do have that desire. So I kind of got roped into it. And I think I wanted to experience it and see if I liked it. So my friend Alicia got the permit and I drove down and met them at the trailhead. And the idea was to sleep in the car. But that was also the same day that everyone else in Washington decided they also wanted to summit Mount St. Helens. So parking lot was packed. And there was no sleeping. And we probably were geared up and ready by about 3:20 a.m.
Wow.
We got to the permit required sign as the sun was peeking up over the edge. And we didn't summit until noon. Being that it was in April, there was, you know, still very snowy up there. I don't think I would want to do this during the summer because I've heard that at the top, it's just gravel and you take a step and you slide backwards and you take another step and slide backwards.
Oh, geez.
So in the snow, you know, we snowshoe, you stash your snowshoes, then you put your crampons on and then it's just a steady stair step climb. the rest of the way. So I actually really enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. And I told my family that I'm so sorry because now I'm going to have to do all of them. And if I want to do all the fire lookouts, Mount Adams is technically a lookout. So I have to do that one anyway.
There you go.
Yeah. But my favorite part about doing Mount St. Helens and my biggest worry, I actually have a bad knee and hip. So the idea of going downhill is not a good idea for me. But knowing that I got to glissade made all the difference. That the glissading was the best part.
Yeah, that looks so much fun. And I think, you know, when I come across a snowfield on a hike, if it's safe, I'll slide down that thing instead of hiking the switchbacks.
Yeah, for sure.
So, and you know, you really had a gorgeous day up there because you could see all the mountains because it was a clear day. You could see Rainier, Adams, and even Hood, right?
Yeah.
Do you have the next mountain picked out? Is it Adams?
It is. It is Adams. Well, wait, actually, I think we decided to do Helens every year.
Nice.
In April. So, you know, like the first nice day, we're kind of all ready to just call out of work and go. But as far as Adams goes, we want to do it when the lookout is exposed. So it has to be the end of August or beginning of September, hopefully on a day that there's no fires.
Yeah.
But that is the one, that's the one that's planned. And that's the one that I'm physically training for.
You know, one question that we always like to ask our guests, Aaron, is there a regular summit routine or maybe a end of the hike routine that you do? You know, for some, it's packing a favorite snack or a trail beverage, or even just having a moment of zen at the top or going to get a favorite meal afterwards. Is there a regular custom that you like to do with your group of friends when you reach your destination or maybe when you make it back out?
So along the trail, no matter if we're going in or out or at the destination, we all look for heart-shaped rocks. And we all have an outrageous collection of heart-shaped rocks. I thought about counting them recently and seeing how many I have. But recently, I started writing on the back of the rock in Sharpie which hike it came from and the date that I went.
I love
so that I can actually keep track of which hearts go to which place. The other thing I love to do, especially in the winter, is I bring Kuju coffee with me. And I love to have just a hot cup of coffee whenever I get to where I'm going, or bring it with me on my way back just because you get kind of cold when you stop moving and just a nice little energy kick.
Yeah.
As far as snacks go, I usually carry the Pro Meal bars or a banana. Just carbohydrates, vitamins, sugar. Like I said, I always get so excited to see my car. That's part of it. That's part of the routine. I always go, oh, good, it's still there. It's anxiety that I have of some reason someone's going to steal my car from a trailhead. I don't.
Yeah, I would say that's the second best view on a lot of hikes is once you make it back to your car and it's there, it's like, ah.
Yeah.
We've talked about some challenging sections of hikes that you've done, but throughout all your hikes and travels, has there been any close calls, whether, you know, sometimes getting a little bit lost or Mother Nature catching you by surprise or even just an unexpected wildlife encounter?
So we never see any wildlife. If anyone has any amazing wildlife places to go, please let me know. We started calling bears unicorns because we'd be like, oh, we're for sure going to see a bear on this one, because all the reviews, everyone says bears, bears, bears. And then out on the trail, the people we pass will be like, yeah, I saw a bear. And then we just never see one. So, and I've never seen mountain goats. I see a lot of deer. And for some reason, I've seen cows a lot. But
interesting.
I know. Mostly in Eastern Washington is where I've seen the cows. But as far as Mother Nature, the Puyallup Ridge incident was very interesting with the snow blowing sideways. I think my favorite one, though, we had done Sourdough Mountain on July 26th. And July 29th is when the fire was discovered. And then we did Copper Ridge August 4th. And we were coming up the ridge. And I pointed it out. I said, Katie, that looks like a fire cloud. And she was like, oh, no, that's a bummer. Like, we thought we were going to have to leave and we're coming up more. And it's getting taller. And I I was like, I think that's sourdough. And we finally come up to the fire lookout, and there's a fire lookout there. And I said, is that sourdough over there? And he goes, I don't know. I don't think so. And then his radio just starts going off, and you can hear the fire lookout that's on Desolation Peak. Mm-hmm. And you could hear Ross Lake Resort on the radio, and they're all talking about evacuating. And I was like, oh, yeah. Wow. I was like, that's definitely a fire. And we're sitting there, and you could just, it just looked like a mushroom cloud coming up. From the other side of this ridge. Luckily, it's farly enough. We were in safe territory.
Yeah.
But to see it up close like that was just insane. I think there were reports that people could see it from Everett. That was probably the most intimidating experience where I learned that Mother Nature is really in charge. And kind of why I gained an understanding of why when there are wildfires like that, that they don't get just, you can't just put them out because mm-hmm. they are their own entity. You can't just put it out. It's creating its own atmosphere and pulling oxygen from all around. And yeah, it was a magnificent fire to witness.
Oh, I can't imagine seeing that. Oh, that's incredible, Aaron. Now we're at the tail end of 2023. Is there any hiking or travel goals that you have for the remainder of the year and any other hiking goals outside of possibly Adams in 2024?
I don't have any major goals for the rest of 2023. The summer was just so packed full that I kind of missed the thrill of picking a place on the map and going on a day hike, because I am a pretty avid day hiker as well. I got really, really homesick this summer doing all the hikes that we did. But for 2024, we've already put 4 major hikes on the calendar. But the reason being, so she and I both have this understanding that we're not promised tomorrow. Like I said, you know, so we want to get this done. We want to get these fire lookouts done while we're still young, while we still have our health, while we can. So the 4 that we have on the calendar, 1 including Adams, are going to be 2 to 3 day backpacking trips. And that should be the last of the backpacking trips for the fire lookouts, hopefully.
Oh, well, I'm excited to see the pictures, Aaron.
I'm excited too.
You know, that was it for the regular questions. This last portion of the podcast is the this or that questions. I'm going to give you 2 hiking related topics, and you just choose the one that you prefer out of the 2. All right. So the first one is, do you prefer ascending or descending?
Ascending. My knee hurts too much to come down sometimes.
Now, this one's a tough one, especially here in the Pacific Northwest, but waterfalls or summits?
Oh, summits.
Summits?
Summits, okay. All the way. Yeah. Waterfalls are just part of the journey.
I like that. Okay. Now, this next one is about trail systems. Do you prefer a trail with switchbacks or do you prefer just to go straight up?
I'd say it just depends on how much elevation I'm going. I think if it's above 5,000 feet, I'd probably prefer to just go straight up because I just want to get it done. Switchbacks can become very frustrating. Yeah.
And we answered this one early on in the podcast, but trek poles or freehand?
Freehand.
This next one's about your footwear. Are you rocking trail runners or do you prefer hiking boots?
I just switched to trail runners this year. I preferred a soft sole hiking boot prior to this, but mm-hmm. I found that hiking in something that gives my toes a little bit more free range actually helps with the pain in my hip and foot. So I'm a trail runner person at this point in my life. Now that it's snowy in the mountains, though, I'm going to have to go back to boots.
Next one's also another trail system question, Aaron, but do you prefer a loop trail or an out and back trail?
Probably loop. Yeah, just gives me something a little bit more to look forward to. You're not, but then again, there is the comfort in seeing the landmarks as you're coming back.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Maybe I would say I would do an out and back and then go back to one and do the loop after I know what that out and back is, because just for the sake of my anxiety.
I like that answer. Okay. During the summer months, Aaron, or even the winter months, some people are doing it. But when you do come across a body of water here in the Pacific Northwest, do you jump in or do you stay dry?
I'm not a jump in kind of person. I tried to be this past summer. I really mm-hmm. did, but it's just not for me.
Those mountain lakes, I know people jump in them like they're 70 or 80 degrees, but they are cold year round.
Yeah. Snow water. It's cold just thinking about it.
Now, you've been able to witness both of these at Fire Tower Lookouts, and I think this might be the toughest one, but sunsets or sunrises?
Oh, sunrise. Okay. Sunrise for sure. There's not a lot of people who are willing to wake up and go the distance to experience a sunrise. So you get a lot of alone time or time one-on-one with whoever you're with. I do think that the colors are somehow better. And I think there's this element of hope with a sunrise that you just can't really get with a sunset. There's this mental connection to it that brings joy.
I like that. Now, this next one is another tough one for some folks, but spring wildflowers or fall colors?
I'm a wildflower person for sure. Yeah. Okay. That's my favorite season to hike in, is probably like that early summer when all the wildflowers are blooming. And Evergreen Mountain, that before I went to Three Fingers, Evergreen Mountain was my favorite fire lookout because the wildflowers there are just, the whole mountainside is covered with wildflowers.
Oh, wow. I'm going to have to add that to my list.
It's definitely worth it.
Now, the last one's the most controversial one, Aaron, but when it comes to social media, do you tag a hike or do you not tag a hike?
Lately, it's either, okay, I usually do tag, mostly because some of them are permit required anyway. And also, they're so long and so far out there, I don't think anyone's going to go whether I tag it or not. And people are going to ask me where it is if I don't tag it anyway. So it's, you know, I'm not really much of a gatekeeper per se. Yeah. I think I do tag. If I don't, like I said, it's just because I forgot to put the tag there.
That was it for the regular or for the this or that questions, Aaron. For folks that want to follow your adventures on social media, what are some of the places and handles that they can follow you at?
What is my Instagram handle? I think it's aaron.hikes.pnw.
Yep.
Is that it? Okay. Yeah. Or Aaron Hudson. That's my name. You can look that up too. Yeah, I'm a redheaded hiker.
We'll be sure to add the handle in the episode show notes. And
okay.
You know, thank you so much for coming on the podcast and sharing your amazing experiences that you had. I'm looking forward to seeing what 2024 has to come. And you're truly an inspiration, Aaron. Yeah, Three Fingers has been on my list, but I have that anxiety and, you know, cautiousness about doing it. Like, I want to do it as safely as possible. And just knowing that there are hardships, but that you could easily overcome them is really motivating.
Well, I plan on going again, so maybe I'll get in contact with you and you'll have to come with.
Oh, for sure. Well, thank you so much, Aaron. Appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, no problem.
And that brings us to the end of this episode alongside Aaron. We extend a heartfelt thanks to her for coming on the podcast. Make sure to stay connected and follow her upcoming adventures on Instagram at aaron.hikes.pnw. Be sure to check out the episode show notes for all the episode links. We have an incredible lineup of episodes planned throughout the fall, and we can't wait to share them with you. New episodes will be dropping every Monday with occasional bonus episodes on Fridays. To ensure you never miss out on those thrilling tales, remember to hit that like and subscribe button. Your support means the world to us. Don't forget to join our vibrant community on Instagram at Hikes and Mikes. We'll be sharing episode visuals, my own personal hiking content, and so much more. Let's stay connected and continue to inspire each other on this remarkable journey. As we bid farewell, remember to tread those happy trails, embrace the great outdoors, and keep the spirit of adventure alive. Until next time, my fellow explorers, happy hiking. This episode's music was created by Ketsa. Follow him on Instagram at Ketsa Music. This episode is brought to you by Flip Socks. Whether you're on the trail, on the job, or in the yard, Flip Socks will keep Mother Nature out of your boots with their innovative nylon sleeve. You no longer need to worry about any annoying debris getting trapped in your boots during your hikes. Simply flip down the nylon sleeve over any boot to prevent Mother Nature from finding its way inside, keeping your feet comfortable all day long. To get your first pair, visit flipsockswithaz.com and enter promo code HikesMikes10 at checkout to receive 10% off your order. And for listeners who use the promo code at checkout, I'll be donating 100% of the Season 2 promo code proceeds to Big City Mountaineers, who provide transformative experiences through connections to nature that strengthen life skills and build community for youth and disinvested communities across the nation. So if you're tired of bits and pieces of the trail finding its way into your hiking boots, pick up a pair of flip socks today with the promo code HikesMikes10 to get 10% off. For website and promo code, see the episode description.